One of the perks of the weekly parsha is that we don't need to wait for Shavuos in order to get to Har Sinai. We have Parshas Behar that takes us there express. And as we know, the opening topic of Parshas Behar is Shemitah. And famously, the Torah emphasizes that this was communicated to Moshe at Har Sinai. And Rashi famously voices the question of Chazal in the Toras Kohanim, Ma inyan shmita etzel Har Sinai? Why is there, what is behind the emphasizing or reiterating that shmita is given at Sinai? Valo kol mitzvos nemru mi Sinai. All mitzvahs are given at Sinai. Tired mitzvahs nemru l'moshe b'Sinai. Rather, it teaches you about the scope of each mitzvah that was given at Sinai. Ma shmita nemru klaloseha uprotoseha v'diktukeha m'Sinai. Just as shmita was given not only in its general principles but also its particulars, its details at Sinai, Afkulon nemru klalosehen b'diktukehen misinai. So too all other mitzvahs. So Shemitah, in a sense, flies the flag for all of Tariq mitzvahs and sets the tone. And that is the response of the Toras Kohanim. This is famously, as we've mentioned in the past, it's quoted as the opening Rashi. Rashi hasn't said anything yet. All Rashi's done so far is quote the Toras Kohanim. The second half of Rashi is his explanation, which we have looked into in the past. But I would like to use this comment of Rashi to ask a follow-up question. Because as we will appreciate, there is a certain question which only begins when Rashi has finished. Namely, if Rashi's question was, why does the Torah choose of all the mitzvahs to repeat the idea of Sinai? And the answer is, well then Sinai is an example of how the mitzvahs were given. Namely, klalim and pratim. The question still remains, of all the mitzvahs, why was Shmita the one that was chosen to represent the rest of Taryak? Any mitzvah, in theory, could have had the words Bahar Sinai, and we would have made a similar comment. Just like this was given at Sinai, it's clearly repeated to emphasize and to elucidate, but any other of the 612 could have done the same job. Which means, ironically, Rashi opens by saying, Ma inyan shmita etzel Har Sinai, what's shmita doing with Har Sinai? And gives the answer, and when he finishes, we ask, Ma inyan shmita etzel Har Sinai, but why of all the mitzvahs, why shmita? Why is shmita chosen? Well, as the Mefarshim point out, and there's many answers to this follow-up question, in order to understand Ma inyan shmita etzel Har Sinai, what shmita specifically doing connected with Sinai, we need to ask a more basic question still, and that is Ma inyan shmita. What is shmita at all? And then we'll see why it comes to be associated with Har Sinai. And a very beautiful explanation is to be found in the writings of Rabbeinu Bachya. And he associates, of course, and draws a parallel between Shemitah and Shabbos. The Torah itself refers to Shemitah as Shabbos Lashem, the Shavs Ha'aretz, Shabbos Lashem. And moreover, we can see very clearly that they have much in common. They both involve rest. They're both the seventh. Shabbos is the seventh day. Shemitah is the seventh year. And not only did they share the same timeline, but they also share the same theme. For what is Shabbos about, let us ask. When we discuss Shabbos, we'll then come to expand to the Shabbos of Shemitah. Shabbos, as we know, it's imperative once a week for a person to realize that as much as he is involved in the world and participating and developing and creating, but he needs to realize that he is ultimately not the master of the world, and he needs to recognize that that is the domain of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. as we say, Yismuchu b'malchuscha, Shomer Shabbos v'kare onik. Shabbos is a day of Malchus Hashem, recognizing Hashem is ultimately the master of the world, much as we would like to think to the contrary from Sunday to Friday. And that actually is also important with regards to Eretz Yisrael and finds expression in the mitzvah of Shemitah. Because likewise, we enter the land and we're sowing and planting and reaping and harvesting and buying and selling and developing. And it's easy, as the Pasuk always warns us, for a person to fall into the idea of Kochi v'otzem yodi asali esachayel hazeh, asinu, we're here, we've done it, we're in charge, we're masters of our own destiny. We're responsible for answering to our destiny. We're not masters of our own destiny. And that's why Shemitah is to the years what Shabbos is to the days, and the theme is the same. And the moral of the story is, it's to instill within the Jewish people the essential trait of humility, which is ultimately is about recognition of truth, not to have a distorted or bloated sense of exactly how much we are achieving, but to understand, as the Pasuk says, remember Hashem, He's the one that blesses your efforts. You need to invest those efforts, but the blessing of those efforts come from Hashem. And therefore, what is emphasized and focused on the mitzvah of Shemitah is the trait of humility. And that brings us back to Har Sinai. Because as we know, and there's many ways to understand it, many levels to understand it, but the Gemara has its famous, the Medrash more in detail actually, discussion of the different mountains. The Gemara states it in a very linear fashion, and that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu forwent all of the taller mountains, Tavor and Carmel and all of those, and found Har Sinai, the lowest of the mountains, because that's how a person receives Torah. If a person is a Har Carmel or a Har Tavor, so he's not gonna receive that much Torah. As the Kotzker Rebbe points out, if the goal of giving the Torah is to give it in a low place, one could have suggested that why give it on a mountain at all? Why not find a valley or something like that? That's as low as it gets. But the Kotzker Rebbe says, because your goal in life is not to be a valley. I mean, you've got to be a mountain, but you've got to be a mountain with perspective. And hence, Har Sinai. And that is why, says Avinu Bachya, of all the mitzvahs, there is a special affinity, there's a special connection between Shemitah and Har Sinai, because what Har Sinai embodies is the value that Shemitah is looking to promote and instill within the Jewish people, the all-important trait of humility and of not having a distorted sense of our national self. There is a further idea here as to why Shemitah of all mitzvahs is chosen with regards to its association with Sinai. As we see from the Parsha, Shemitah contains two mitzvahs, in fact. Namely, the first is to desist from work on the land, Sadcha lo tizra, Kamecha lo tizmor, got to lay off the land. But there's a second mitzvah, and that is the produce that grows. And produce does grow in Shemitah. But the produce that grows in Shemitah is Hefker. Kol dich v'yeseh v'yechol. Anyone who wants can come. And the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, in the third section, discusses these two aspects of the mitzvah. And interestingly, associates them, or categorizes them, in the two different categories of mitzvahs. As we know, there are mitzvahs that are ben adam al mokom, between man and God. There are mitzvahs ben adam lechaveiro, between man and man. And Shemitah comprises both of them. On the one hand, desisting from working on the land, as we saw from Reinu Bachya, and there's other angles as well, but that is clearly ben adam la mokom. It's recognizing the land ultimately belongs to Hashem, ki li ha'aretz. And that is about our relationship and be ensuring that we retain that sense of reality with our relationship with Hashem. That's the first aspect, ben adam la'mokom. The second aspect, of course, is ben adam la'chaveiro. If anyone can come and partake of the produce that was growing in what used to be your field, that's ben adam la'chaveiro. That's a benefit to your fellow man. So Shemitah comprises mitzvahs of both categories. But there is a further point, because not only does it comprise mitzvahs of both categories, we may have been inclined to say, so there's this aspect, and there's that aspect, and it has both of them, but never the twain shall meet. As if to say, each one has its own domain, and you're obligated to both of them, but that there's no connection between those two. But as we see, actually there is. Because the aspect of Shemitah, which is between man and man, namely that the produce is hefker, is actually enabled by the first mitzvah of desisting from working the land. How so? There are many mitzvahs where the Torah requires one to benefit others and to give to others. There is lending money, and there's tzedakah, pasavach tiftach es yadcha, and there's kindness, and all of those things. And those are, needless to say, very worthy mitzvahs. Is there anything higher than giving something that to someone else? There is. And that is sharing it in a way where you're not even the giver. Removing yourself entirely from the equation as the benefactor, to which the other one is the beneficiary. For rather, when he comes in this year, you say an amazing thing. When he says, is it possible for me to take some of that produce? The answer is not, I'm letting you. The answer is, it's hefker. It's not mine. It's in what used to be my field. Next year will be my field again. Currently, it's as ownerless as if it's in the street. So I'm coming in, and you can go first. And there's no giver. I mean, that is a level of kindness that exceeds kindness itself. Because the person isn't even receiving a kindness. He doesn't even have that difficult feeling which we discussed in one of our shiurim leading up to Seder night, where someone is giving me something. No one's giving him anything. He's collecting, and the owner of the house and this stranger collect together from the field. How can it be? That level of bin adam lachaveiro, of having the produce ownerless, is empowered and enabled by the first part of the mitzvah, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, because ultimately, and this reality is now imposing itself, the land is mine. So if the land is mine, so you're both guests, but be my guests. But neither of you is more the balabayit than the other. And really what we see from Shemitah is a fascinating example of where a firm vision, bin adam lamakom, can lead to a higher vision of bin adam lechaveiro. And that's now the synergy and the harmony that exists between these two types of mitzvahs. And that is crucially important as we approach Sinai. There is a certain predilection whereby a person might feel that when it comes to the mitzvahs of kindness, so that's about being a kind person, and the Torah doesn't surely have much to say about how to be kind. When it comes to bin adam lamakom, of course, so then I'll need guidance, because how do I know exactly how HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to relate to him? And yet we see that the full meaning of Sinai is that even the bin adam lamakom, or more correctly, even the bin adam lechaveiro, receives higher expression from bin adam lamakom. And that's a perspective on Sinai. And it's just to bring us back to last week's parasha, as we note in different ways in different years, once the Torah in Parshas Emor has gone through the Moadim in Vayikra Perek Kaf Gimel, and it's taken us from Pesach to the Omer to Shavuos, it then interrupts, so to speak, before moving on to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. It interrupts with mitzvahs again of kindness. When you harvest the fields, so leave the corners and leave what you forgot and leave what fell, etc. Why does it do that? Because, once again, at Shavuos, having received the Torah, it makes its mark on these mitzvahs of kindness on Ben Adam Lechaveiro. So this is another perspective on the special connection that exists between Shemitah and the message that it gives us and Har Sinai of receiving the Torah. Now, later on in Pasuk Kaf, we take a look, so the pasuk voices the concern that some people may have as to what it is that they will eat during the Shemitah year. V'chitomru. If you will say, Manocha b'shon ha'shviyas, what will we eat in the Shemitah year? Hein lo nizra, v'lo nesefes tevuaseinu. There's no sowing, there's no harvesting. So, okay, what's the answer to that question? The answer is in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, V'tzivisi es birchasi lachem b'shono ha'shishis. I will command my bracha to you in the sixth year, v'asas es advur l'shlosh ha'shonim, and the produce will be sufficient for 3 years, that is to say the end of the sixth, the seventh, the beginning of the eighth. And these are well-known psukim, v'chitomru, manocha b'shono ha'shviyis. If you'll say, what will we eat? The answer is there will be a special bracha, and there will be enough for those years. Now, what's quite interesting about these psukim is that the Torah doesn't normally talk in this way, as if to say, in this very question-answer format. Normally, whatever is like, will happen, will happen. To say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will say, V'tzivisi es birchasi, it's a very back and forth in this way. If you'll say, I mean, Tosus talked this way, V'im tomar et v'chi tomru, and if you'll say, what will we eat? It's a good shayla, and here's the answer, good question, deserves a good answer, and it's two psukim, where all it needed to be is one. Because actually, you could really break up anything the Torah says in this way. If you start by saying, if you'll say, how should we celebrate Pesach? And the answer is in the following way. So why here is it presented as a question and an answer? One almost gets the impression that it's a good thing you asked. In the sense that it sounds like, if you ask this question, so then, okay, so then there'll be enough. And what if you don't ask the question? Doesn't say. What's all the more troubling is that Pasuk Kaf and Pasuk Kaf Aleph state, if you're wondering what you're going to eat, the answer is there will be enough food. I mean, that is a brief summary. The problem is, have a look at the Pasuk that preceded Pasuk Kaf. Have a look at the Pasuk that preceded the question, which states, V'nasna ha'aret piriyah, v'chaten nasova. I mean, this is about Shemitah. The land will give its fruit. You will be eat to satiation, bishatin levet achalea. You'll be safe, secure, satisfied. Which means now it's all the more troubling because we've not only received the answer to the question, we actually received the answer before we asked the question. So, what are we to make of this answer question answer sequence? And this question is discussed in the Sefer Noam Elimelech. Rav Elimelech of Luzensk, who's actually a very well-known Hasidic personality, the Noam Elimelech, very, very highly regarded, one of the Talmidim of the Mezritcher Magid. He was part of that Chabura of the Magid's Talmidim. I was told that there were certain Rebbeim who would not enter a house if it didn't have the Sefer Noam Elimelech. Ad Kedei Kach was it regarded. So I bought a copy. So I'm still waiting for the visit to the Rebbe, but in the meanwhile, I started reading it. And he discusses this question in the name of his brother, Reb Zusha. Reb Elimelech and Reb Zusha, the two brothers, both Talmidim of the Magid. And Reb Zusha says a wonderful thing. And that is that the Torah from the outset takes care of the Jewish people who keep its mitzvahs. As if to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has arranged the layout of the world and the setup of the world so that keeping mitzvahs will never lead to a lack. Which means if once in 7 years, every seventh year, there's no work on the land going on, because we're doing a mitzvah called Shemitah, so part of the power of the mitzvah of Shemitah is inbuilt, shall we say, into the mitzvah of Shemitah, is the power to bring about bracha, that there should be enough. And that really is what Pasuk Yotes is saying. V'nas na'aretz piriyah. This is the natural way that Shemitah should be fulfilled, is that there will be enough, v'achalta nosova, and you'll be satisfied. So the mitzvah will almost like take care of the Jewish people. There's just one problem. And that is the correct fulfillment of the mitzvah of Shemitah is that it's an expression of trust. As if to say, the full fulfillment of the mitzvah is to desist from working the land, but with the right perspective. Trusting in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he'll provide. If that's how the mitzvah is done, so then it will bring about the bracha. The fulfillment of that mitzvah will bring about the bracha. The question is, what would happen if you fulfilled the mitzvah, but you didn't have the bitachon that goes with it? Which sounds like you're saying, okay, the Torah says, I can't work the land. My question is, well, now what am I going to eat? So in a sense, you're stuck. Because the mitzvah, or the fulfillment of the mitzvah in its correct way, would have provided the bracha. But Pasuk Kaf is describing people who are not fulfilling the mitzvah in the right way. Because they're leaving, but they're leaving with very loudly voiced questions and highly felt reservations as to exactly where things are going to come from. So the bracha is forfeited. The Jewish people are stuck. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm not going to leave you like that with no food. But you know what's going to happen? You will then require me to reinstate the bracha. Because you forfeited the natural bracha of Shemitah, it will need to be artificially reinstated. And that's why Pasuk Yotes says, if you keep the Shemitah with bitachon, everything will be fine. If you keep the Shemitah without bitachon, v'chitomu, should you be asking, so then Pasuk Kafala Fitzivis Bichosi, I'm going to have to command another bracha. I mean, that's an executive intervention, so to speak, in order to get things back on track. So this is the very interesting explanation of these psukim from the Rebbe of Zusha, as quoted by his brother, the Noam Elimelech. The truth is that the sequence of psukim here, Yotes, Kaf, and Kaf Aleph, promise, question, answer, has already been discussed much earlier, and that is in the writings of the Sforno. And we can see, from a certain point of view, the forerunner of what Reb Zusha is saying in the Sforno, but actually, the Sforno is not the same as what Reb Zusha said. Because according to the Sforno, as we'll see, Pasuk Yotes describes without questions, then comes the question, and Pasuk Kaf Aleph post-question. But post-question is not reinstating Pasuk Yotes. It's actually a different way that Shemitah will occur. As if to say, the difference between whether Shemitah is observed with the question of Manochal or without the question will determine the way that the bracha of Shemitah expresses itself. How so? So the Sforno, who rarely writes at length, and here, true to form, has just one or two lines on each of these psukim, but it's worthwhile to hear the way that he says it. Each word of the Sforno requires study. Pasuk Yotes says, V'nasna haris priya, and V'achaltem lasova, you will eat to satiation. Now, what is the meaning of those words, v'achaltan masova, to eat, to satiation? What it means is, it expresses the quality of that eating, the quality of that food. Sheyu ha-peiros rabei hamazon, that means that the fruit of Shemitah will be of extraordinary nutritional quality. Ochel kima, this is quoting the Teras Kohanim, Ka'am Ramzal, as Chazal said, Ochel kima u'misbarech b'meyav. He eats just a little bit, and that's enough. It will be of qualitatively much greater capacity to bring satiation. And that is how, v'yaspiku peiros hashishis gam l'shaviyas, and that is how the produce of the sixth year will work for the seventh year, because effectively what he's saying is the nutritional quality of the food will be so greatly enhanced that the same amount of food will do for 2 years, because you'll essentially need to eat half as much. That's the type of bracha that's being referred to In your test, we're not talking about a quantitative increase, but rather a qualitative increase, as referred to in the words, va'achaltem lasova. The bracha is in the satisfaction, in the satiation, not in the volume. Now, Pasuk Kaf mentions the possibility that some may have questions. V'chitomu manocha. And if you'll say, what will we eat? Says the Sforno, the kasheu supakse etzlechem. If you're not sure about this, it's not clear to you. Velo tiptechoshia ma'at maspik pe'echuso. And you're not comfortable with the idea, because if you can't see it, all you see is that the produce is growing. It doesn't look like there's more, and you have misgivings as to whether this will really help you for 2 years. If that's the question, then Shmita will change. And rather, v'tzivi says b'chassi, I'll command a bracha, and v'asas as tur l'shaloshanim, it will then produce enough grain for 3 years. That's twice the volume. Ba'ofan shetispa ayin meraos, so that you'll be able to see it. V'tirush yaspika kamis, and you'll see that the volume will suffice. You'll see in front of your eyes twice as much coming out. So, as we say, similar to what Reb Zusha said, there is, in a sense, a before and after, and the question will lead to another bracha, but whereas Reb Zusha says it leads to a reinstatement of the original bracha, the Sforno has already said that actually it will lead to a different type of bracha. And what's very interesting about the Sforno is that it sounds as if the first way of Shmita working is better. As if to say, Pasuk Yotes, which is with no questions asked, and therefore it's the same amount of food, same quantity, just higher quality, is the optimum way for Shmita to occur. And for there to be twice as much volume is actually bidyeved. That's plan B for Shmita, if questions are the wrong type of questions are asked. And the question, our question is, why is the qualitative type of Shmita, bracha of Shmita, better than the quantitative? And perhaps the answer is as simple as that, generally speaking, people are equipped to deal with the volume of a yearly harvest. They don't have the natural twice the storage capacity. They never need it. Which means, in a sense, it's a better bracha just to have the same volume, because you don't need to start building new storehouses that you're only going to use once every 7 years. And in a sense, therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I'm saving you a lot of trouble. It's the same yield, volume-wise. No need to put yourself to any more trouble. It's exactly like a normal year of work, the sixth year. And the seventh year is completely off. If you want to see it, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so you'll see it. And now deal with it. Because now what are you going to do? So now you need to store twice as much. You asked for it. You got it. But that could be why that the increase in volume is the bidyeved way. But perhaps there is another. This foreigner didn't reveal his secrets. He didn't explain why one is better than the other. But the truth is that these two types of bracha, they're two quite different types of miracle, in the sense that the first is much more low-key, shall we say. It's more... It's hidden in the sense that what meets the eye is the same, but it's a qualitative increase. And it's closer, in a sense, therefore, to the natural yield. And maybe the Sforno is indicating that is actually the better way for all these things to occur, closer to nature. You won't be left wanting, right? It will have a greater properties, enhanced nutritional value, twofold, but the... In terms of the way that it comes out, it will come out the normal volume. The second way is less desirable, because a double yield, which is more of a departure from nature, perhaps that's less desirable. And this is a very interesting discussion, which actually takes place in the Gemara, as to whether if someone needs something, is it better for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to provide for that person with an open miracle, or rather through a much more natural means. There's a famous case in the Gemara Maseches Shabbos of someone, unfortunately, his wife had a baby and then she passed away, and he's left with no, the child needs milk, and there's no wet nurses or whatever, and as the Gemara describes it, he was miraculously endowed with the capacity to nurse the child. And this story got around, and different sages of the Gemara were talking about it, and they had radically different reactions to it. And one approach was, how great must this person be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed such a miracle for him? It shows you his stature. Whereas Abaya said, what did this person do wrong, almost, or how it's deficient that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, had to break the laws of nature in order to provide for him. If he was really on level, there would have been a way that was much closer to nature. And effectively, it represents two perspectives, shall we say, on the role of open miracles per se. Are they something that should be sought after and celebrated? Or on the contrary, do they represent a necessity? But what is the ideal? That is the question. Is the ideal to live with open miracles? Or is the ideal nature? And of course, remembering all the while that nature itself comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He has set up the world in a way that has the capacity to take care of everyone's needs. It's also of great interest as we see that these two ways that Shemitah can happen, and one is a somewhat closer to nature way, and the other is a more of an open violation or abrogation of the laws of nature. Rabbeinu Bachya states that the mitzvah of Shemitah is very forward-thinking in the sense that it leads us towards the geula. It's always about the seventh, right? The seventh millennium, and the idea of seven is always associated with geula. And that's why, says Rabbeinu Bachya, the Torah is so stringent and the violation of Shemitah is met with such a severe punishment, because in a sense it's an abdication on the concept of ultimate redemption. And with regards to redemption itself, there is a well-known discussion as to how that might come about and what is the optimum way for it to come about. It can come about through miracles, it can come about through natural processes, which is the ideal. And it's interesting to see that the two prototypes, shall we say, for redemption are actually to be found within the mitzvah of Shemitah itself. So these are some comments with regards to the famous question of Manocha Bashana HaShviyas, Reb Zusha, and then working backwards to the Sforno. Now, as we know, there is a mitzvah of counting in this week's Parsha. It's not as famous as the mitzvah of counting in last week's Parsha, which is Sfiras HaOmer, but it's to be found in Pasuk Ches. So let's take a look there. Where is the counting in Parshas Behar? Says the Pasuk Ches, V'sofar tolacha, sheva shapso shonim. Count for yourselves. Count for yourself. Seven lots of 7 years. Sheva shanim sheva pamim. And that will take you to 49, and then year 50 is the Yovel. So the way the Pasuk expresses it is that there is a mitzvah to count the years in the Shemitah cycle and in the Yovel cycle. It would be thoroughly unfamiliar with this, but if you hear it, it would really sound like this year is year 22, which is three Shemitah cycles and 1 year into the Shemitah cycle. Okay. But in fact, as the Sifrei discusses, this is a mitzvah for the Beis Din, as if to say, this is not a mitzvah for every farmer. It's a mitzvah for the Beis Din. At the beginning of every year, they would count, with the bracha, actually, according to numerous poskim. Shekhet Hashanah mitzvot v'tzivanu al sfiras shmita v'yovel. Just like we say al sfiras ha'omer. And then they would count. But it's a mitzvah for the Beis Din. And why is it a mitzvah for the Beis Din? It's in the Torah. The Torah has said to the Jewish people, why is it a mitzvah for Beis Din? But the answer, as discussed by Tosfos, is because unlike Sfiras HaOmer, which is phrased in the plural, as we know in the pasuk that we say regularly, Usfartem Lachem, with regards to this mitzvah, counting Shemitah and Yovel, it says, V'safarta Lecha. Because it says it in the singular, that's why it's a mitzvah for Beis Din. But what does that mean? And why does phrasing in the singular translate into a mitzvah for Beis Din? So the basis of this is a very major comment of the Vilna Gaon in his Sefer Aderes Eliyahu in Parshas Nitzavim, which is then taken by others as well. that this is really the difference between when the Torah addresses the Jewish people in the singular and in the plural. And we find examples of both. But what divides them? Why would the Torah sometimes address in the singular, Loshon Yochid? Why sometimes in the plural, Loshon Rabbim? Says Vilna Gaon, in both cases, it's talking to the to all of the Jewish people. But the Jewish people can be addressed as individuals, each and every one of you. And the Jewish people can be addressed as one entity called the Jewish people, Knesset Yisrael. If the Torah uses the plural, it's plural because it addresses the plurality of the Jewish people, each and every one of you. But if it addresses the singular, it's still talking to everyone, but everyone as one. And sometimes when it comes to mitzvahs, if the mitzvah that devolves on everyone as one, it then enters the province of the Beis Din, who represent the Jewish people as one entity. And that's why, whereas Sfiras HaOmer in the plural is for everyone, as we know, for the mitzvah of counting Shemitah and Yovel is for the Jewish people as one, and that finds expression by being counted in the Beis Din. So this is quite a different mitzvah than Sfiras HaOmer. But actually, this mitzvah has bearing on the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. And let us see why. A very, very interesting discussion that takes place amongst the Poskim and the Meforshim. As we know, there are numerous mitzvahs that are to be fulfilled through speech. Kiddush and Hallel and such like. But we also know that it's possible to fulfill the mitzvah without actually saying anything, as long as you hear someone, and he has you in mind, and you have him in mind, and he's motzi you. And that's a concept which is called Shomea Ka'ona. And this is done routinely. Anyone who makes Kiddush for other people in their house is motzi them through Shomea Ka'ona. The essence of Kiddush are the words, not the wine. It's the words. The wine accompanies the words. But the actual mitzvah are the words that are said, and other people, they listen. He's motzi them. So on and so forth, reading the Megillah, as we said, very often in Shul, Balkuri reads, everyone has a mitzvah to read the Megillah. He's motzi them. So now the Shaila is, what about counting the Omer? Is it possible to fulfill the mitzvah of counting the Omer by hearing someone else? Have me in mind. Be motzi me. Now you might say, well, is it such a trouble for you just to say one sentence today? Is it? Okay, it's no trouble, but have me in mind. And what if a person can't speak? Is he out of the mitzvah? So that is the question. Is it possible to be motzi someone else in the Omer count? Says the Levush, one of the great early commentators on the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Mordechai Yaffa, no. One person cannot be motzi anyone else, another person, in counting the Omer. Why do I say that? Because I have evidence, says the Levush, that counting the Omer is exceptional to this rule. Because the Gemara states, in Maseches Menachos, Samechei, on the words, V'sfartem lachem, Shetehei sefira bepeh kol echad ve'echad, each and every person needs to count. So that's the Gemara telling you that this mitzvah is unusual. Certain mitzvahs, not everyone needs to say it. You can hear it from someone else. But for whatever reason, the Gemara has stated, black on white, comes to Sfiras HaOmer, each and every person needs to count. So the answer is no, as per the Gemara. Now that doesn't seem to leave much room for debate, because the Gemara says everyone needs to count. Is there another opinion? Yes. And that is the opinion of the Pre-Chadosh. Again, these are early Perushim on the Shulchan Aruch. Pre-Chadosh. And the Brichadar says, yes, you could be motzi someone in Sfiras HaOmer. Now, obviously, he is going to have some explaining to do. The Gemara just said every person needs to count. And the Brichadar says, no, someone could be motzi you. But what about the Gemara that everyone needs to count? Says the Brichadar, when the Gemara says that everyone needs to count, it doesn't mean that everyone literally needs to count by themselves. What it means to emphasize is that this mitzvah is not like the other counting mitzvah, i.e. of Shemitah and Yovel, where it's just the Beis Din that represent the entire Jewish people. That is a point of distinction. It is a mitzvah for everyone. That's the point. Having said that, like any other mitzvah that's for everyone, one person could be motzi, someone else. And this then now is the question between these early Perushim on the Shulchan Aruch. What does the Gemara mean by emphasizing that this is a mitzvah for everyone? Does it mean it's a mitzvah that everyone specifically needs to fulfill for themselves? Or rather, it's about the obligation. It's upon everyone. How do you fulfill the obligation? The way you fulfill any obligation that's on everyone. Kiddush is on everyone, and someone can be motzi you, and so is Megillah, and so is Hallel. And so too, Sfiras HaOmer. Interestingly, closer to our time, there are those who explain the background to this question. Can you be motzi someone in Sfiras HaOmer? Because it will ultimately take us into the question of how being motzi someone works. As we can appreciate, there's many details to this question. We'll take the highway, the Derech HaMelech, just to see the basic discussion. And it begins by a fascinating dispute between Rashi and Tosfos as to what to do if someone is in Shmona Esrei when the Chazan is already in Kedusha, which can happen. So there's some places they don't break for anyone. So hesitate, and they're in Kedusha. So so here he's in the middle of Shmona Esrei. One thing we know, if you're in the middle of Shmona Esrei, you do not interrupt for Kedusha. You don't interrupt. You don't say anything. You cannot say Kodesh, Kodesh. Even for Kedusha, you can't interrupt. It's a hefzer. So what do? You're halfway through Shmona Esrei, they're already at Kedusha. Says Rashi, so keep quiet. Why? Because listen to the Chazan. He'll be motzi you in Kedusha. Perfect. You can't actually say Kedusha yourself, but someone else is saying Kedusha. Be motzi with them, which means the Chazan should have those members of the congregation in mind. Simple. What could be wrong with that? Says the Tosfos, do not do that. Do not listen to the Chazan. Do not try and be yotze with the Chazan. Why? Because if you're yotze with the Chazan, it sounds like you said Kedusha, and you can't say Kedusha because you're in the middle of Shmona Esrei. In other words, if it works, you're in trouble. Because isn't that what Shemeh Kodesh? Shemeh is like you said it. But we don't want you to say it, because you can't be that yet. So you can't say Kedusha. But you do not want to listen to the Chazan, because he will then generate a hefsek for you. It's a very interesting dispute. I mean, Tosfos object to you listening to the Chazan saying Kedusha on religious grounds. And what is behind the dispute of how do we get to the bottom of this? So really the question is, how does being motzi someone work? I mean, what is it? And this is discussed by Rav Zolti, the Rav of Yerushalayim, Rav Bezalel Zolti, in a Sefer Mishnas Yavetz. You see, there's two ways to look at what it means. When someone makes kiddush for me, what's happening? I'm meant to be kiddush myself, but I'm listening to someone else. How does that? It works, but how does it work? You could say that the chiddush here, because it's for sure a chiddush, the chiddush is that this is almost like halachically generated speech. As if to say, normally, in order to say something, I need to say it. But the chiddush here is that by hearing someone else say it, if we have each other in mind, it's as if I said it, even though I'm actually just hearing it. It's halachically generated speech. It's simulated speech. And very good, because as soon as I've said it, perfect, because that's my mitzvah. I need to say it, and I did. Or could it be? No. When I listen to someone else, and they're motzi me, you know, everyone needs to say the mitzvah. And I'm not saying anything. But I'm still yotze, because I'm attaching myself to someone who is saying it, and therefore I'm being yotze through them. At the risk of oversimplifying, they're almost like my shaliach, in a sense, that they're... The chiddush here is that if you're hearing, it's sufficient to fulfill the obligation. No one said that it's like you said anything. The point is you don't need to say anything. It's enough to hear it from someone who's speaking, and you're yotze. Those are the two possible ways to understand how being motzi someone works. And that's really what's behind the dispute between Rashi and Tosfos. Tosfos understand that the point is, if he's motzi you, it's like you've spoken, but you're not allowed to speak in the middle of Shmona Esrei. So don't get involved. Don't do it. Don't listen to him. That's Tosfos. But Rashi recommends that you should listen to him, because Rashi takes the more, so to speak, passive approach to being motzi someone. It's not like you've spoken. you're yotze through hearing. You're allowed to hear during Shmona Esrei, and it's not like you've interrupted, because the point is not that you said anything. So this, again, we're briefly touching on these two ideas, but these are the two approaches. Says Rav Zolti, perhaps this question, or the answer to this question, will answer whether you can be motzi someone in Sfiras HaOmer. Because the Gemara says, Svartem lachem, shetei sfira bepeh kol echad ve'echad. Each person needs to say Sfiras HaOmer. So now the question is, can I listen to someone else? It depends. What does it depend on? It depends on whether listening to them is the equivalent of you saying it. If it is, then that's perfectly acceptable and it's called Sfira bepeh kol echad ve'echad, because the halacha considers this speech. But if being yotze with someone else is never as if you said it, but you fulfilled the obligation, so here the Gemara says that it needs to be bepeh kol echad ve'echad, and that you don't have. And therefore, the question, much discussed and continues to be discussed, hinges, according to Rav Zolti, on this the understanding ultimately of how shomer ka'ona, what it means to be motzi someone. As we move just a little further, two final comments, and one relates to the mitzvah of Yovel. In Pasuk Yud, we've spoken about Shemitah, and Shemitah's lead to Yovel. V'kidashtem eshnatzach ha-mishim shana, u'krasem deror ba'arz dechol yoshveha. And you proclaim freedom. U'krasem deror. Yovel hitiyelachem, v'shavtem ishalachuzaso, v'isha mishbata toshuvu. Property returns back, people return back. And what that means is, as we know, is that any eved, any servant who has stayed beyond the 6 years, he can never stay beyond the Yovel. Yovel comes, he's got to go free. According to Ramban, we've mentioned in the past, that's where the word Yovel comes from. We translate Yovel as Jubilee. That's not a translation, that's a transliteration. That hasn't taken us further into the meaning of the word, because what does Jubilee mean? So Yovel, says Ramban, relates to the word Lehovil, which is to lead, Lehovil, to direct, because everyone's directed home. Every person, everything is muval, everything is led back to where it came from, property and people. And this mitzvah of releasing all servants, ukrasem deror, it's a very interesting mitzvah. And it's discussed by the Rosh Hashiva of Slabodka, Rabbi Isaac Sher. Rabbi Isaac Sher was a son-in-law of the famous altar of Slabodka, Rabbi Nosson Zvi Finkel. And in his sichos, he mentions a widespread notion with regards to this mitzvah. Again, we spoke before, ben adam la'makom, ben adam la'chaveiro. What about setting servants free? This is hailed in many circles, says Rabbi Isaac Sher, as the classic or the epitome of ben adam la'chaveiro. You see, at a certain point, doesn't matter, you set him free, he's no longer under your authority, everyone goes free at a certain point. That's a ben adam l'chaveiro statement. Says of Isaac Sher, that is a gross misunderstanding. And perhaps even the opposite of what this mitzvah is. It's a distortion. For a very simple reason. Firstly, whoever said that has no notion of what it means to have an eved ivri. Because the guidelines that the halacha has for taking care of the eved are so extreme that actually, ben adam lechaveiro, to have a person living in your house and to take care of him like that. As is well known, with regards to certain things, the servant has to be like the master. And if there's only one, the servant gets it. It's a famous halacha. If there's only one pillow, the servant gets it. And the master sleeps without. That's ben adam lechaveiro. To the extent that the Yerushalmi in Kiddushin famously says, kolo kone eved, kone adam la'atzmer. If you purchase the servant, you've purchased a master. Because you basically need to serve this person and to take care of all their needs. That's without the union. That's the mitzvah. Moreover, ben adam lechaveiro, to withhold him, you're oppressing him. The whole point of this Eved is that he has opted to stay. He wants to stay. He likes it with you. Which means if you want to be kind to him, you keep him. He doesn't need to stay past the 6 years. What does he say? Ahavti es Adoni, es ishti ves banai. I like it here. And therefore, when you keep him on, you're actually granting his wish. To the extent that if you were actually to say no, he would be upset. And if that's true at the outset, it's for sure true by the time Yovel comes. Because by the time Yovel comes, he may have been in your employ and enjoying your benevolence for 30 or 40 years. And now how old is he? And when you release him, what's he going to do? And now wonder whether it's really a classic expression of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro to let him go. He might beg you to not to release him. He now has to fend for himself. He'll work hard for you, but he just doesn't want to have to start from scratch. And it's a classic example of where a superficial survey of this mitzvah leads to the opposite of what the mitzvah is about. Because the truth is that in this case, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says the reason behind the mitzvah explicitly, because the Jewish people are my servants, meaning not only him, but also you, and not only you, but also him. And that what that means is that ultimately, as much as he's comfortable with you, it is not acceptable for him to move past the Yovel year and to have any master over him other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is Bin Adam Lamakom. And that's a very interesting perspective. Again, it's so easy just to have a moral knee-jerk response to this mitzvah and miss the point completely. The point is, as it says in the Pasuk, he may resent you for letting him go. And Kadosh Baruch Hu says that he cannot live out his life past the Yovel year regarding you as his Adam. That is an unhealthy relationship with regards to him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Adam Lamach. I'd just like to conclude by referring to a comment of Rashi in Pasuk Lamed Ches. Almost all of this week's Parsha is Perek Kafhe. There's been many mitzvahs, and the Pasuk concludes, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Etzeisi Eschem, Me'eretz Mitzrayim, I am Hashem, your God took you out of Mitzrayim. Los is lachem es Eretz Kanan, to give you the Eretz Kanan, lius lachem nelukim, to be a God for you. Interestingly, as Meshech Chachbuch points out, we're not going to go into his explanation, but just to note the observation, there are numerous mitzvahs where they're accompanied by these words, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Etzeisi Eschem, Eretz Mitzrayim. But rarely does the pasuk continue to bring you to Eretz Kanan, lius lachem nelukim. That's unusual, even within that group of mitzvahs. Okay. And what does it mean? Lasis lachem es Eretz Kanan liyos lachem elokim. To give the land of Eretz Kanan to be for you as a God. Rashi comments, and Rashi doesn't say Midrasho, and Rashi doesn't say Rabboseinu. Rashi just says the following, but it is from the Teras Kohanim. To give you the land of Kanan to be for you as a God, shekol adar be'eretz Yisrael ani lo lelokim. Whoever lives in the land of Israel, so I am a God for him. If a person would leave, ka'oved avodas elilim, it's like he's serving idol worship. Now that's actually an amalgamation, so to speak, of two comments that are to be found in the Gemara, which famously states this in the end of Maseches Ksubos, the Kuf Yud and Kuf Yud Aleph. Those are the Eretz Yisrael, so to speak. Sugyas, at least in terms of the Shvach of Eretz Yisrael. And there the Gemara originally says if a person lives in Eretz Yisrael, it's like he has a God. And in the Chutzlar, it's like he doesn't. But then the Gemara was reacted to that. It felt it was too harshly stated. So the Gemara modifies it to say that if he's in Chutzlar, it's like he's Oved Avodah Zara. That's the moderate version of this Chutzlar, idea. Like Avodah Zara? Ah. What does this mean? There is as we can appreciate, a statement like that needs to be explained, otherwise it will do nothing for us and we won't get anything from it. And this Gemara is discussed by the Pnei Yehoshua, Rabbi Yehoshua Falk of Frankfurt. And he says, again, he comments on the Gemara, Kol Adar Be'eretz Yisrael Doma K'mish Yesh La'Eloka. One who lives in Eretz Yisrael, it's like he has a God. And not in Chutz La'aretz. Ta'amom uvu'ar. The reason is explained as follows. Why is it that only a person lives in Eretz Yisrael, it's like he has a God? Lefi she'b'chutz la'aretz efshar she'yateh libo. See, life in Chutz La'aretz, it's possible that a person, his heart, can convince him, she'ola misnayg al pi mazolos chas v'shalom. In other words, life in Chutz La'aretz, it has its own way about it, and he's part of it. In which case, where does his success come from, and where does his survival come from, and where does all that come from? It comes from the way things work. It's a system. Mashenken mishadar be'eretz Yisrael. But that changes when a person lives in Eretz Yisrael. Shu bilti l'shem levado, because Eretz Yisrael, there's no system in the middle. It's direct, the supervision. Kedachtiv, as the pasuk says in Parshas Re'eh, Eretz asher eini Hashem elokecha ba me reishis hashana but acher shana. It's the land that Hashem's eyes are on the land from the beginning of the year to the end. But what does that mean? Hashem's eyes are on the land. It reflects a certain directness of supervision and directness of interaction. VMK, and therefore says the Pnei Yehoshua, if a person lives in Israel, and he thinks to himself, how am I doing? And if I'm doing well, where is that coming from? There's only one answer that's apparent to him. Vade ein belibo ela echa. There's only one in his heart. She'eino lihi she'en kiim ala avinu shebashamayim. That it's clear to him that all of this is coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And these words, I think, are really worthy of much reflection. Because what the Pnei Yehoshua is saying is, the reason why behind this such an extreme sounding statement, a harsh sounding statement, that only a person lives in Eretz Yisrael, it's like Hashem, he has a God, because it means is, because if you live in Eretz Yisrael, you can't avoid it. You can't avoid where it's coming from. The existence of the Jewish people in Eretz Canaan, unless you're blind, is coming directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I mean, that's at every stage. And I think that this idea is of critical importance, and especially in these days that have passed recently and continue to be with us. Because really there's an unspoken part of what the Pnei Yehoshua is saying, and that is, and what if a person lives in Eretz Yisrael and still refuses to recognize that the success of the country is coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in spite of open miracles. So this person himself has performed a miracle. He's been presented with a direct supervision from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and still refuses to see it. And therefore, as fundamentally more apparent as it is, but that behooves the Jewish people to recognize it. And this now becomes the question of how we relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's supervision of us in Eretz Canaan. What is required of the Jewish people is to participate in Hashem's supervision of them. What is not acceptable is for the Jewish people to take credit for all of the success that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given them and the blessings that he's bestowed upon them, and to refuse to see where they're coming from, because they're in the very land where that should be impossible. And there's better ways to achieve the impossible than to do it that way. So these are major themes, I believe, and should heighten our sensitivity. Look around, and you see literally day by day the Jewish people in the land of Israel is a series of blessings directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The more we appreciate it, and the more we respond to it, and the more we rise towards it, Mitzvah Hashem should lead to further increase until we find the Geula Shelema, which should come to Meher B'Yamin.